Welcome back to Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drantz. We are live from the Kintech studio. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Dunbar Lumber with three stores to serve you in Ladner on Bridge Street or Dunbar Lumber Express at Ladner Center or Arbutus in Vancouver online at DunbarLumber.com. So obviously we're talking trades. We're talking potential Canucks trade targets here, less than 24 hours to go before the NHL trade deadline. And as you laid out in the first segment, you know, the Canucks, their posture going into tomorrow doesn't necessarily scream aggressive. Now, it's Jim Rutherford, it's Patrick Alvin, so there's always a possibility of aggression, but Gensel, Toffoli, Buchnevich, it might just not work out. It might not be the assets and the willingness to part with those assets to get a deal like that done.
Yeah, the Canucks can still be aggressive, but it's got to be a very specific type of aggression, right? Like, that's sort of how they're set up now. You know, with double retention, you can still add a pretty hefty salary. I mean, when you cut a salary by 25% to 25%, it's amazing.
It opens up a lot. Yeah.
It's amazing how $4 million becomes $1 million, right? Yeah. It's amazing how $6 million becomes 1.5. So there
Math.
Are
it's amazing.
What was that? Like magnets? How do they work?
Yeah. Insane clown posse, right?
ICP.
Yeah.
Man, the internet used to be a fun place. So whether through retained salary transaction or, you know, some other device like that, I mean, I sort of project with Pod Colson on the roster right now, and, you know, Tyler Myers not having been placed on IR at any point, right? He's still not. Joshua's on IR, so his salary is still counting on the books. And really, Pod Colson, reassigning Pod Colson's your only device to like save cap space yourself without leaning on another team or some other thing. I mean, you can maybe have a million and a bit. So that gets you to a Toffoli level salary, right? That gets you to most of the way to a Zucker level salary with double retention. But then you're trading an additional mid-round pick. I mean, that's the cost of doing business. That's not something the Canucks should be afraid of at this point. But it's worth noting, you know, this team has four draft picks.
They have
in 2024.
They've spent a lot of draft picks.
They don't have a third the next season. They don't have a third or a seventh the following year. Again, not a huge deal for a team that's performed the way the Canucks have this season, but something to be aware of in that, you know, if Toffoli, for example, it comes at the cost of a 2025 second, at least a Vasily Podkolzin quality future asset, and you're paying for the double retention, that's, you know, an additional fifth round pick or fourth round pick, you know, that matters. Like, that reduces your ammunition for the next time, right? Which is something we're seeing right now. I mean, go look at the Carolina Hurricanes prospects. There's a reason why they're
in a position to go get Gensel,
right?
Yep. Like, even the Rangers are in a position to go get Gensel in a way that the Canucks aren't.
And I think the Canucks are aware that with the value of their own holdings right now might not be the moment for them to go outbid, because what then if you go outbid on Gensel, what happens the next time?
Yeah.
Right? Not to mention what happens as the Pettersson extension kicks in and then potentially Filip Hronek and then on and on down the line. This is sort of the difficulty, right? That as well as this experiment has gone for the Canucks, you know, not everything has shifted overnight. Even as the results at the NHL level has, you know, mostly due to the credit of this front office. Rick Tocchet.
One name I wanted to bring up.
All you fans who never...
That's right. Everyone who never gave up.
Yeah. All of you loyal fans.
One name I wanted to bring up, but really a pair of names from San Jose. So longtime Sharks reporter Sheng Peng tweeting earlier, can confirm that Alex Barabanov is being scratched tonight for trade-related reasons, says he's not sure on Anthony Duclair yet. I believe I've seen other tweets out there suggesting that Anthony Duclair will be scratched for trade-related reasons, and Peng says he's told there is significant interest in both heading into tomorrow. And a bunch of people, we can talk about both.
I just want to note, significant interest relative to Alexander Barabanov.
Yeah, and Anthony Duclair.
No, no, he's legit.
But we can
so
talk
is Barabanov.
We can talk about Barabanov.
That was too dismissive.
Lots
I like
of people texting
players.
In about Duclair, right? Keith asking, what about Duclair? Marcus and Gibson's asking, what do you think the acquisition cost would be? Somebody else saying, Anthony Duclair, speed, scoring, playoff experience, lower cost winger option. And I think that one, like, if it was a choice between Anthony Duclair and Jason Zucker, I know Jason Zucker has the familiarity with this crew from Pittsburgh, but you look at Duclair, and, you know, it was just last year that he was going to the Stanley Cup Final with the Florida Panthers, right? His numbers weren't off the charts or anything, but he was a contributing member of that team. Just a couple of years ago, he had 30 goals for the Florida Panthers, and we know the speed skill is so attractive to Jim Rutherford historically, so... Look, it's obviously a pretty steep decline from Gensler to Foley, but if we're talking mid-range options, that's one that if you just say, we just need some extra speed, we need some extra boost, some scoring capability in our lineup that we can move around, I mean, Anthony Duclair, I think, becomes a really interesting option for me.
So Mantha went for a second and a fourth,
mm-hmm.
right? That's another winger. Wenberg got slightly more, or a second and a fourth. It's a conditional second that could upgrade to a third, but effectively the same return. So a second and a fourth is kind of the market price right now of middle six.
Mm-hmm.
Is that fair? Or are those guys viewed as top six? I don't think so. Middle six guys.
Yeah, Mantha's
fourth,
a funny one.
Fourth
because
and a third for Tarasenko, but he had full
he had
control.
No, yeah.
So, like, that's kind of your range. Like,
yeah.
Probably somewhere between Mantha and Tarasenko is where you land on Duclair. So that's two mid-round picks of some value. Maybe you actually have to do the second and, like, a seventh, something like that, second and a sixth to land him. Big fan. I really like Anthony Duclair's game. My concern, I suppose, is at the end of the day, you know, he missed a lot of last season
mm-hmm.
as he recovered from an Achilles injury. Right now, an Achilles injury is even scarier than like a multi-ligament tear in your knee, right? Because that's literally like the elastic in your leg, right? Now, my concerns about him being less than 2 years removed from Achilles surgery are mitigated significantly by the fact that because I'm a sicko, I've watched the Sharks play, and he can still move like Anthony Duclair, you know, at least like 95% of Anthony Duclair. This isn't a Sean Walker or a Ilya Mikheyev type, like, ooh, I don't think that's who this guy is, what I'm seeing right now in terms of their burst. So that probably gives you a fair bit of confidence, but I'd still look at it as, you know, one with some risk just based off the, like, at this point, statistical profile of guys recovering from these types of injuries. Like, an Achilles is a super significant
mm-hmm.
injury, and he's less than 2 years removed from it. That would at least give me some pause while still absolutely loving what Duclair could bring, you know, especially if he's at this pace. One thing I've really liked about him down in San Jose, every time I watch Sharks like post-game interviews and stuff, this guy hates losing.
Mm.
Like you can tell that even in an impossible situation, he's like maintained a high competitive level and hasn't like settled into this. You know, this isn't like drudgery that he's accepted at any point. He's mad every night.
And sometimes you love those types of players. I mean, obviously you want all your players to hate losing, but when you can get a player from a miserable situation and all of a sudden they're brought into a team that wants to go chase the Stanley Cup, like, don't underestimate what that can do for a player's psyche. Right?
Oh.
Like, it's such a lift,
no
such
kidding.
A weight off your shoulders. Like, oh, I'm not on this bottom-dwelling team. This good team wanted me to come help them go far in the playoffs.
Well, with double retention on Duclair, too, you could get that down to 750K.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a super appealing piece. I like Duclair, and I like Barabanov, too. Barabanov's less of a goal threat, obviously, less skilled, but he's got the sort of pace that I think this club doesn't have at the moment from Ilya Mikheyev. You know what I mean? Like, he's a really, really good, strong skater. I think that could help. Like, I think an injection of some additional depth speed is,
mm-hmm.
you know, not the worst thing, but I think you'd be looking at him more as, like, competition for Phil DiGiuseppe as opposed to something more.
Right. Yeah, a bottom six option
yeah.
to throw into the mix
like,
there.
Duclair makes... adding Duclair creates a competition for Mikheyev and DiGiuseppe,
mm-hmm.
right? Whereas adding Barabanov, I don't think really, I don't know if that's enough to push Mikheyev out of the top six, and I think we all kind of agree that Mikheyev should be pushed out of the
top six. That's
something
that needs to happen.
I think the Canucks kind of know that, too.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's why we're here. They're in on, like, all of the scoring wingers that are on the market, almost.
Yeah, but they might be... I mean, you might do that even if Mikheyev was crushing.
Oh, sure. Yeah, but I think it adds a sense of urgency to it.
It should.
David from Surrey texts in, do you guys think that Riley Smith could be available out of Pittsburgh? $5 million AAV would be a good fit with Hoglander and Petey. He also says Canucks should target another right-handed defenseman, too. Well, I think Riley Smith is definitely available. Like, that has not worked out in Pittsburgh,
nope.
how they wanted it to after picking him up from the Golden Knights. We haven't heard his name in connection with the Canucks. He's got another year left on his deal, which is one of those, it's a double-edged sword, right? Because sure, it's not just a pure rental, but that's also $5 million or whatever it ends up being. And the thing with that is it makes the double retention much more difficult, right?
Yes.
Because you're not just asking two teams to retain for 6 weeks. You're asking them to retain all through next year as well.
And the all through next year means full cost, right? Not prorated cost. And that's a huge deal. Like, why do these double retention deals not happen until the last week before the deadline? Because there's real money involved. So I would be very surprised if the Canucks went after Smith. Stylistically, I think there's a thing to just a basic rule of thumb to keep in mind when evaluating players and whether or not they'd be of interest to Rutherford, Alvin, and Canucks hockey operations, right? Do they check at least one of these three boxes? Elite skill, elite speed, elite size. If you check even one of those three boxes, I think the Canucks will at least take a chance on you. I think that's like key to how they look at players. And by the way, that's been key to how Rutherford's built teams for 25 years, for a generation, my entire lifetime, right? If you have elite speed, they'll give you a look. If you have elite size, they'll give you a look. If you have elite skill, they'll give you a look. In Riley Smith's case, you're talking about like a really smart, extremely sharp and reliable two-way player who's neither very big, very fast, or very skilled. He's Mario in Mario Kart. He's good at everything without having one standout strength. I struggle to imagine that he's a Rutherford-type player.
Mark from Campbell River brings up a good point. I agree with you on Riley Smith that he doesn't necessarily seem like a target, but he says, could you swap Mikheyev and then something else for Riley Smith?
No, they like Mikheyev.
Well, and that's the thing, because if you go through elite speed, elite skill, or elite size, when Mikheyev was signed, he had the elite speed.
Absolutely.
Doesn't right now. He might get it back, though.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that they're open to keeping him to have him around when he does get that elite speed back, if he does.
100%. Also, he's big. Like, he's 6'2", 200 pounds. You know, like, don't discount the fact that Mikheyev is also a big player. And then that speed, like, there are real short-term concerns about what Mikheyev can provide this for the balance of the season.
Mm-hmm.
But there is also real long-term optimism about what he can provide over the balance of this contract. And given what we've seen, even from older guys, Eichel, Walker, Kane... I'm inclined to buy it. Like, I'm inclined to avoid making the mistake that I made on the air in discussing Sean Walker last year, which was he looked so fundamentally compromised that I'm nervous about it, that I'm out, you know, and then I see him this year. He looks exactly like the guy that I was so high on for all those years when he was in LA. I'm not making that mistake again. Like, give high-level professional athletes with serious work ethic the time to fully heal, and whether or not they get 95, 96, 98% of the way back to what they were, they get back.
Mm-hmm.
It's incredible. Mikheyev needs more time, period. I strongly believe it.
And that's, yeah. I mean,
the Canucks do, more importantly.
Which is not to say that you can't trade him. Obviously, there's scenarios where you have to consider it.
Well, you
but
have
I just
to
think,
weigh the short
exactly.
and long term.
I think you also just have to recognize that it's not irrational to want to keep him, because there's a very plausible scenario where he's a much different player going into next season. Lotso texts in, a couple of interesting texts here.
Sorry, can we? I want to come back to this.
Okay.
The waiting, the short versus long term.
Because
this is one of the things that's so fascinating about the next 24 hours, right? Is in the next 24 hours, we are going to have a definitive answer to the following question, which I think is probably the biggest one and has been the biggest one for like 3 months, which is how much do the Canucks want to win this year and how realistic do they think the chances are of them doing so?
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're already in, right? I mean, forget the Lindholm deal, right? It's way more than that. It's the second used to get off Tanner Pearson and bring in Casey DeSmith. It's the fifth used to bring in Sam Lafferty. It's the third and the fifth, although they acquired the fifth for Anthony Beauvillier, traded again today, by the way, for Nikita Zadorov, right? Slowly but surely, this team has pushed a lot of assets into this season already. And now we're sort of at the final point, and it feels like the Canucks have almost gone, not all the way, you know, like they're still further that they're willing to go, but I don't think it's a whole lot further. I don't think it's like an uncharted territory beyond the seas here, right?
Yeah.
So at some point, though, the deadline will pass and we'll have a definitive answer. How much do the Canucks want to win this year, and how confident are they of their ability to actually do it now versus the need to look long term? And Mikheyev's sort of part of that. Part of that equation. Lindholm's part of that equation, obviously, but also in terms of how things unfold over the next 24 hours. That's one of the best parts about the deadline, is we're going to get through, and through action more than words, the Canucks are going to tell us in some meaningful sense more about their plan than anything Rutherford or Alvin can say on, from the dais after the season or after the deadline passes.
Interesting text here from Lotso, who says, you guys highlight some interesting scenarios, but when you have a successful first place team, why are you going to add maybes or experimental additions? You're not. If Rutherford's making a deal, it's all star or not at all. And I do think, to what you're saying, there's an interesting kind of philosophical question here, right? If you can't get Gensel, Toffoli, let's say Buchnevich, Everly, right? I'll put those four guys, I think, a clear tier above in terms of scoring wingers than every other player on the market. If you can't get a legitimate guy who moves the needle for you like that, should you even pursue those middle range options, right? Or is it better to keep your powder dry? Somebody else texted in, Colin from the Caribou, I really hope the Canucks' big move at the deadline is no move. Build us a dynasty, not a St. Louis. I mean, look, I'd take a St. Louis
and
winning a Stanley Cup.
St. Louis was awesome for 15 years.
They were very good for a long time.
They just happened to break through in like the last realistic moment before their window expired.
I would take one cup. I would, even if it was a blip, I would happily take that anyways. But
so
I understand.
So every Canucks
I understand
fan.
That you want to... you want to extend the window as much as possible and increase your chances of getting at least one by doing that. And I don't know. I can see the as much as I've been pounding the table to be aggressive, I can see the argument that if there's not a true star out there, don't spend, you know, two or three more mid-round picks once you factor in the retention and all of that to go at a guy who might just be another guy in your lineup, right? I can see that now that you have Pettersson signed, right? Hoglander is developed nicely. You've got a lot of cap space and flexibility in the summer. I'm kind of there with the, you know, okay, if your big game hunting isn't successful, don't feel the need to burn more assets necessarily right now. Now, having said that, Vegas doing what they're doing, I think it puts the Canucks in a really difficult position, right? Because the Lindholm acquisition hasn't worked out how the team or the player or anybody wanted it to, it feels like the Canucks haven't made their big move, right? So you see Vegas go do something and you're like, oh, the Canucks have to keep pace with Vegas. Well, actually, the Canucks already made a really massive acquisition. It just hasn't had the on-ice impact that they wanted it to have. But now they're in this kind of difficult position where they've already given up a really significant haul for a player, but you're also looking around at the other teams in your conference and saying, oh man, it feels like we need to keep pace with them a little bit too.
The Canucks aren't going to be moved reactively to keep up with the Joneses. I've sort of inquired about their posture. I don't think they're feeling that pressure. I think they're feeling pressure to upgrade their roster. I think they're feeling pressure to add an additional scoring forward because they think that's what they need. They thought that's what they needed on Tuesday morning. They think that's what they need on Thursday morning, right? I don't think that's changed as a result of the other teams loading up. I think this club truly believes that if they play within their staples and structure, that they can beat anybody. Like they think they can win without necessarily breaking the bank or getting too concerned about keeping up with, you know, some of the arms race that we're seeing develop in the Western Conference over the course of the past 27 hours. We've talked a lot about like the Doug Waite and Mark Recchi of it all,
mm-hmm.
the Phil Kessel of it all, established veteran scoring forward, right? That's been, how many times have I said that combination of words over the course of the past 6 months? Endlessly. The fact is, though, is that
that's not the only thing.
That's not
done.
The only ingredient, yeah. Right? I mean, roll the dice on Mark Strait, right? Roll the dice on Ron Hainsey. I mean, Rutherford's done deadlines where he brought in maybes. What ifs, right? That's Justin Schultz. That's yep. part of it. That's part of it, too. And so, you know, I wouldn't be shocked necessarily if we saw like a Barabanov type addition, especially if the Canucks are like, look, we've got a pretty young team here still, right? We're going to take our shot. We believe we've already done so. And really what we're going to do is pick around the edges while preserving our assets because we've got the big picture in mind. To me, that's not necessarily the wrong call. But it's not what I'd expect, and we can get into this more yeah. in the final segment.
It's just going to be really interesting to see the reaction if sure. they have a really quiet deadline with all the hype of the aggression, and it feels like with the shine having already worn off Lindholm, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Even though they did do a big move, if they don't do anything else, I'm not saying like I'll be super critical. I think there's very much an argument to be made for doing that. I'm just going to be fascinated to see what the reaction is.
Yeah, you know. One thing, though, like one thing that Rutherford and Co. have done well is pivot, right?
Yep,
I mean,
yep.
think about their first intention was not to sign JT Miller and trade Bo Horvat. In fact, it was the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
But when they couldn't get one done, they pivoted. That's looking pretty good, although I think fans in Vancouver would be shocked by how effective Bo Horvat's been this season. Were they paying attention? I'll give you another example, because again, everyone talks about the Doug Weight of it all from the 2005-2006 Carolina Hurricanes run. What people don't know is that the Hurricanes got to the absolute one-yard line and in fact thought they had an agreement with a certain North Vancouver winger named Paul Kariya. And at the last minute, Paul Kariya gets a call from Timu Solani, who talks him into joining him in Colorado. Like, that was the Colorado year,
mm-hmm.
and that's what people remember. What people don't remember is this Rutherford-led team having struck out from the one-yard line, stuffed on the one-yard line on fourth down to land Paul Kariya, who would have been the biggest franchise addition in their history since they drafted Chris Pronger, pivoted and signed Ray Whitney, the Wizard. Now, Ray Whitney was like older, but from that point on, Ray Whitney still had 529 career NHL points Woo. In him, including 3 seasons of 60 points or more in Carolina and 9 goals in 24 games as they won the Stanley Cup that year. This is the business, and this is not something that's going to shock Canucks management given its composition.
It's going to be a fascinating 23 hours. We'll talk about what the Canucks might do. A lot of what has happened around the league already as well, including Vegas, loading up, poised to do more. Sean Gentile from The Athletic joins us next here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.
Big opinions and good bets. It's the People Show with Bick Nizar. Be sure to subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650, Jamie Dodd, Thomas Strance, live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of 5-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. And the hotline is brought to you by Dispatch Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning. The first call, the only call. We now go to the Dispatch Plumbing and Heating and Air Conditioning hotline, where we are joined by our pal from The Athletic, Sean Gentile. Sean, thanks for doing this, man. How are you?
Greetings from Jake Gensel, Ground Zero, here in Pittsburgh.
I thought we were Jake Gensel, Ground Zero here. It looks like that way, but maybe not anymore.
No, we're
so much.
We're aspiring Pittsburgh.
Yes, that's true.
That's what we are out on the Canadian West Coast.
That's what I've always said that about Vancouver is like someday maybe Vancouver
they wish
can
we wish we could be Pittsburgh
be on the level of Pittsburgh, southwestern Pennsylvania. Yeah,
yeah, we don't like sheets enough. Sean, give us the view. Give us the view from Pittsburgh as we leave the tunnel and cross the bridge into downtown. What's going on on Jake Guentzel?
I'm wondering if, like, that price that it seemed like Kyle Dubas had set for himself is going to be what we actually see come through, right? Like, it just feels like I don't think any team is totally out of it. I think that the teams that people kind of assumed would be involved, like the Vancouvers and the Vegases, and, you know, some of those, I don't think anybody's fully out, but it just seems like fans are starting to slip through the hourglass. Like he's gonna get moved, but it's becoming a little bit dodgier that he's gonna bring back the Godfather package that I think a lot of people around here were anticipating.
Given how Kyle Dubas's first year has gone, how the Penguins season has gone, you know, Guentzel's importance to the team when they were winning, how important is it for him to really like crush this return if he does in fact trade Jake Guentzel?
I think there needs to, like, here's what I'll say. I can imagine people being okay with two pieces coming back, but it would need to be like a first rounder and a legitimately good prospect, not just, or whatever, like not a B plus guy, not, you know, a first and then a conditional third and then some guy who's, you know, the sixth best prospect in the system. Like, I can imagine people being okay with like two higher end assets coming back. But no, I do think it's important because I think part of it is that Dubas is painting himself into a little bit of a corner. Like he's talking about needing to get younger and, you know, kind of not just the Guentzel trade situation, but just the fact that he's not signed. You didn't get an extension done with him. Like he's routed himself to one particular set of outcomes. And I think with that comes a certain amount of pressure. So yeah, I think people around here are feeling it for sure.
Which team do you think he makes the most sense for? Like, which team should be paying up for Guentzel?
Colorado.
Oh yeah. Let's go.
How about that?
Just bring in a quarter of a new team. Like, literally half their forward group is completely new.
They're like, whoops, we screwed up and forgot to build a half decent second line in the offseason, so we'll just do it in the 3 days before the trade deadline. Wow. Yeah, I that's the one that I look at, and I'm like, first off, they're being reckless, right? Like, in the best way possible. Colorado does not care. They don't care about the future. They're like, we can win right now. They've clearly shifted into that mode, at least publicly, in a front-facing way over the last 36 hours, right? Because you move Bo Byram for Casey Mittelstedt, who's now their second-line center, locked in. You get a really good rental right-shot D in Sean Walker. You add a bottom six piece in Brandon Duhaime. But you're still like, you look at that second line, and it's like, if it's a series against the Dallas Stars, or whatever, when Miro Heiskanen and the Stars' top line is kind of like neutralizing McKinnon and Rantanen, you want some more dudes down the lineup to score. And I think it's the idea of having Mittelstedt and Guentzel in that mix, added over the last couple of days is really, really interesting. And I think that it seems like they have the mindset necessary to at least come close to meeting, you know, the ask there.
Well, they have Callum Ritchie still, so they still have one premium asset that they could dangle. Do you think the prospects thing makes sense here? The focus on a prospect as opposed to a draft pick from the Penguins' end?
I think in a perfect world, it would be, you know, maybe someone who's a little bit closer than Callum Ritchie, but man, he's been awesome. And I talked to... This is about Noah Hanifin, but I talked to a Western Conference scouting director a couple weeks ago about Callum Ritchie, and he just came up over the course of the conversation, and the guy just he wouldn't shut up about Callum Ritchie, right? he couldn't say enough great things.
I had the same experience last week, man. Right? People love this kid.
It's wild. I mean, I shouldn't say it's wild. It's like, it's something to see where you're like not public opinion necessarily, but like hockey world opinion seems like it's coagulating, coalescing around this dude being a difference maker, right? Mm-hmm. So no, if Callum Ritchie is like, if it's Callum Ritchie in a first or whatever, I think that's not the kind of package necessarily that Kyle Dubas had in his mind a week ago, but it probably should have been. I am like I'm all for going with with quality over quantity. I would rather have two really good pieces instead of one really good piece, an okay piece, and then a whatever piece. Right? So if you can get a package where Ritchie is the headliner and there's some whatever conditional first or something like that, if I'm Kyle Dubas, I think long and hard about that.
Can I throw something at you? Because one thing that I have found interesting about this is, you know, I don't know that Dubas has a lot of guys that he chats with. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. I feel like the Penguins mm-hmm. are really operating in an information vacuum here, and that's yep. been an interesting dynamic to observe, given that they're holding like a league-wide sweepstakes for Gensel. The other part of this True. That I can't shake, this is just a pet theory, not reporting on any intel, but just a pet theory, because I joked in the first segment that Steve Yzerman wouldn't talk to his family if they were credentialed. And mm-hmm. I can't shake the feeling that not only does Detroit make a ton of sense to be in this bidding, mm-hmm. but Jonathan Berggren feels like the perfect starting point for a discussion, especially given that he seems to be a little bit out of favor in that organization, but could like play on the Penguins lineup tomorrow. Point per game plus in the A, 0.5 points per game in the NHL, size, center, versatility to play wing. And like you throw in one other piece and it's not like Detroit's scant on pieces. Gensel like fits their smart, you know, young-ish, but not too young template mm-hmm. of what they've been adding. And surely he's going to do something. Surely Yzerman's going to do something here, given what that team's accomplished to this point in the season. I can't shake my Detroit Red Wings mystery team Spidey sense from going off. Apologies to Madam Web for the trademark violation. What are your thoughts?
Bud, like you said it. Like they've always been the team, and we're thinking on the same wavelength. Where I have no inside information about the Detroit Red Wings because Yzerman is a vault inside a bigger vault buried at the bottom of the ocean. Right?
He's like, Al Gore's lockbox.
Nobody's ever getting anything. But it's impossible not to look at that roster and say, like, all right, they're pretty good, and they also need something else, and they have cap space to burn at the moment. And then look at what they're dealing with at the top of their farm system in Berggren, who's a guy who just for whatever reason like hasn't been able to break. Cause that is a pretty good group of forwards. It's kind of like a same-ish group of forwards where everybody is kind of as good as the other one. So it's like there's not a lot of, you know, room for differentiation there. And it seems like he's on the short end of the stick. But man, he makes a ton of sense. That deal, you know, Gensel for Berggren plus is something that I've kind of had in my back pocket for a little bit, for sure. But yeah, nobody, but with the caveat being that nobody ever knows what Detroit's up to.
So one of the other big deals that went down yesterday, Noah Hanifin, somewhat surprisingly, goes to Vegas. Sounds like he might sign a long-term extension there as well.
Oh, he already did.
Oh, he already did today.
$7 million AAV, yeah.
There you go.
During the break.
All right, there you go. So breaking news, Noah Hanifin signed a long-term extension with the Vegas Golden Knights. And it's kind of funny because...
Blink and you'll miss it from the Golden Knights, huh?
You know, a couple of days ago, I was looking at Vegas and they're really skidding right now. They've got injury problems. They're old. Mm-hmm. You know, how much gas is left in the tank?
Hey, remember to say 6 points clear of Seattle for the second wild card spot with two head-to-heads remaining.
Whatever you say. But, you know, you're looking at them as kind of a wounded giant, and now all of a sudden they go get Hanifin. They telegraph with the condition on the pick that they're going to go trade their first-round pick next year as well. They still have this year's first-round pick to trade. I'm as guilty of this as anyone, but are we ever going to stop underestimating how aggressive Vegas is going to be trying to build a winner every year?
No, we never will. Like, it's just funny to see people. Like, why is anybody surprised? Like, this is
seriously
their modus operandi, man. This is like the, like a pillar of the organization, is that every year is a chance to go for it. So they're the other one too. Like, it is so eminently possible to be, we could talk in 24 hours from now, and it's like Jake Gensel to Vegas for a first round pick and Brendan Brisson and something mm-hmm. else or whatever, right? Because they still have the money to do it too. Like, despite all this action that we've seen, like, in the last 24 or 48 hours, like, I don't think any of it has taken out the principal bettors on Gensel. Like, I don't think there's anybody in the mix right now. I don't think there's anybody who was in the mix 2 days ago that you can say, like, definitively is out, truly.
So, I mean, I think you're right, and I think that makes this particularly fascinating here. Mm-hmm. But in terms of the Noah Hannafin of it all, one thing that mm-hmm. I'm thrilled about from a just like hockey nerd standpoint, what other standpoint would I be thrilled about it from, is the fact that we've seen sort of a clash in approaches from the two most recent Stanley Cup winners in loading up to try and do it again. And what I mean in particular mm-hmm. is, you know, the Colorado Avalanche have added a 6'1" guy who's 195 pounds and a 5'11" guy who's 191 pounds and a couple beefier fourth liners, but those are their signature adds. And Vegas just mm-hmm. added a 6'5" guy who's 235 pounds and a 6'3" guy who's 207 pounds. So the big bads in the West got bigger and better, and the fastest mm-hmm. team on ice in the West got faster. Which approach do you prefer? Which style of kung fu wins? And who's Cobra Kai?
my Shaolin style beats here. Yeah. I'm of the mindset that it's easier to find good small players than good big players. Like, everybody wants a good big player, right? Like, that's the ideal, is you get a guy who's 6'3" and skilled and can skate and whatever else. But those guys are a lot harder to find. Just by especially when it's the deadline and everyone's dealing with, you know, limited cap space and limited assets and whatever. Like, I'd rather take this could be outdated, honestly, given how much more we've seen, how much more shrift we've seen placed on size over the last couple of years. But I would rather take the guy whose defect is that he's short over the guy whose defect is that he's like not a great skater, or plays like, or has issues with the puck on his stick, right? Like, to me, if I'm picking a player that has a red flag, I'm still taking, you know, the short guy, not like 5'5" or whatever, but I'm okay with a dude being 5'10" if everything else checks out.
I mean, you also get the guys like Marchessault, and Stankoven looks like this to me too, where
mm-hmm.
defenders are never going to be able to get leverage on them. Like, their size is actually a strength. You know, because they're going to be the first to every puck. They're just lower to the ice, and no one's ever going to be able to leverage them off of it.
Totally. Yeah. And if it's, you know, again, if you're short without being too short, from a straight physics standpoint, I think you're totally right. Like, it's, your center of gravity is lower, and some of those guys are tougher to get off the puck. Like, give me that over. You know, not to dump on Joel Edmondson, because I think he's a fine guy to have on your team as like a seventh or an eighth defenseman. But like, whatever. I'm trying to be diplomatic here. That guy. He handles it's like a hand grenade once it hits a stick, right? Like, it's just he has major problems, and that's what his problem is. He's 6'5". God bless him. But like, I don't know. I think if you're drawing from a player pool that where everybody has got their flaw in one way or another, like, I'm taking the kite skill still.
It feels like we so often use size and height, especially, as a proxy for like strength and toughness. And strength and toughness are really the things that matter. Size can be an asset, no doubt about it. But like, that's what you're looking for. You're looking for guys who are strong, who are tough, and they come at all different heights. On Edmonton, I wanted to ask, they do the Adam Henrique trade. They go get Troy Stetcher in a minor move as well today. Does it feel like they've done enough, or that they kind of used their, you know, they traded their first round pick in the Henrique deal? Did they do enough given what Vegas has done and is poised to do, what Colorado has done and could still do, and some of the other contenders around the Western Conference?
I'm just glad that it truly is officially deadline week now that Troy Stetcher
has traded. Exactly.
It's like the choosing a new pope. Like we see the smoke rise from the chimney, and we know that means that Troy Stetcher's been moved for a draft pick. Like the deadline is here.
I think the price went up this year. It was like a fourth round pick this year. Although Vegas got a seventh, or Edmonton got a seventh back as well.
Move Daniely at the deadline means you're an NHL player, baby.
Mm-hmm. But it's, I think at least once before, it's been a seventh round pick. So the price is going up.
Broussard?
The price is going up.
Is he the new Broussard, Gentilly?
You're not allowed to say Derek Broussard that way. Derek Broussard singled the end of the Pittsburgh Penguins mini dynasty. What are you talking about?
Oh man, such a good guy though.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I guess so. So back to the Oilers. I love that they traded the pick. Like, I love that we're seeing a sense of urgency, right? Where it's like who cares? You're trading a first round pick. You know, that you're going to, a dude who's going to be, Connor McDavid is going to be 32 before that guy's relevant in the league. Like, fine, move those futures, move those picks. Like, I'm down for it. I mean, the concern just has to be that Henrique isn't that guy.
Yeah.
Like, he's a good player. He's still a good player. He's more of a wing than a center at this point, but he's still got some, you know, positional versatility and all that. I think it's going to be interesting to see how he fits on a good team after playing on a junk team for the last however many years. I don't hate it in theory. I love the idea of getting Adam Henrique. I love the idea of moving a first round pick. I'm just not sure that I would have combined those two sentiments, especially whenever the Oilers are as, you know, cap strapped as they are, right? Because it seems like they're done. And if you're done with Adam Henrique and Sam Carrick and, you know, Troy Stetcher, then, I mean, it's better than not adding anything, but it's also not going to win any, you're not going to win any deadline trophies for that one either.
We'll get into this more in the next segment, but so many people at this time of year, especially, and ourselves included, spend all our time talking about, like, from the Canucks' perspective, should they be willing to give up Nils Höglander, or Jonathan Lekkerimäki, or Tom Vilander for Gensel, or will they? Yeah, we focus on will they, and don't talk enough about should they. What's your view from outside of the Vancouver Canucks and how much they should want to win ahead of the Stanley Cup playoffs?
I mean, I'm biased towards going for it when you're as good as they are. Like, I think I'm not saying that, you know, whatever, the Philadelphia Flyers should be holding on to their pieces, or that, you know, that the Nashville Predators should be adding salary and whatever else. I'm not talking about those teams, but I think every year there's five teams or seven teams that I just like rubber stamp approve, like, yep, go for it, because you never know when an opportunity like this is going to come around again. And we've seen too much over the years. This isn't just hockey, this isn't sports in general, like prospect hugging and pick hoarding and whatever else. That's all well and good until you're in the President's Trophy race in March, right? Like who knows when this comes around again. There's a lot of teams that get one or two bites at the apple. So I'm of the mindset that, you know, if you're Patrick Alvey and Jim Rutherford, you can move a guy like Höglander to get better. Or, you know, I know Lekkerimäki seems like he's the one that nobody wants to touch, but if you can use those guys to bring in a player like Gensel or whoever else that truly feels like it elevates you into ultra prime you know, tier one, double A cup contender status, I'm of the mindset that you go and do it every single time. We need more teams behaving like that. We need more Vegas Golden Knights and Colorado Avalanches, you know, in the league, because, you know, it's what makes it fun. And and it's fun to see teams, you know, keeping their eye on the prize. You're trying to win the Stanley Cup. Like, it's simple, but it's true. And I think too often people lose sight of that.
Well, and it's fun to see really good teams go at each other in the playoffs as well, right? And look, it's frustrating if you have to go through Vegas or Colorado, or you're a fan of one of those teams. But if you're a hockey fan, you get to see teams like that match up. It's a ton of fun as well. Sean, appreciate the time as always. Good luck on Gensel Watch. We'll see if it resolves tonight or drifts into the deadline day tomorrow. Thanks for doing this, man.
Going to be an interesting few hours for all of us, brother.
Absolutely.
See you guys soon.
That is Sean Gentile from The Athletic. Always a pleasure to have him on. By the way, Irfan Ghaffar, regular contributor here on 650 from the fourth period, saying that Tyler Toffoli will be out of the lineup tonight for New Jersey due to trade-related reasons, that report being picked up by LeBron and others as well. So
sounds like Matt Dumba as well. And I just want to note errors and omissions, or at least partially. Because he had a graphic in the tweet, I thought it was official and from the team account and that he'd picked it up. But in fact, it's reported
by Kevin Weeks.
So I just wanted
He used the graphic that Vegas used when they acquired Hanifin.
Right.
So it looked like he was like retweeting a Vegas tweet.
I got duped by a real account.
Now, having said that, it's Kevin Weeks, he's plugged in. It'll likely be like probably won't be too far off, but it's a good caveat. It's not official yet.
We can get into what that means for Filip Hronek on the other side.
Boy, can we.
Spoiler alert, not that much.
All right, there we go. That's a great preview, a spicy preview of the final segment of the show coming up. No, but we will hear from Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet on a game day when they're taking on the Golden Knights.
Spoke to Elias Lindholm.
Yes.
About being in rumors.
Yes, that's a fascinating dynamic that has cropped up here in the week leading up to the trade deadline. So we can talk about that. Do a quick Abby report as well on the other side. Final segment coming up here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.
Catch up on what happened in Vancouver sports with Halford and Brough in the morning. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance. Canucks Talk brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at DLEAMC.com. We are live from the Kintech Studio. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Dunbar Lumber with three stores to serve you in Ladner on Bridge Street, or Dunbar Lumber Express at Ladner Center, or Arbutus in Vancouver online at DunbarLumber.com. Tune in on trade deadline day to Sportsnet 650's coverage brought to you by AJ's Pizza on East Broadway in Mount Pleasant. Try AJ's traditional New York pizza or sink into their famous Detroit pizza. Only at AJ's Pizza. Order online at AJS.pizza. And as a reminder, what our schedule looks like here on Sportsnet 650 for trade deadline coverage tomorrow. Halford and Brough from 6 to 10. They're doing the extra hour. I think I'll be sitting in with the boys for the final hour of that from 9 to 10. Canucks Talk officially with myself and Drance from 10 to 1. Drance will probably go down to Rogers Arena at some point in there, so I'll probably get Bick in with me. Basically, it's all hands on deck. And then the People Show with Bick and Randeep, 1 to 3. Canucks Central for 3 hours tomorrow with Riccio and Sat from 3 to 6. So wall-to-wall, all hands on deck coverage here on Sportsnet 650 tomorrow for the NHL trade deadline. It's time for the Abbey Farm Report, a presentation of David L. Young of Dexter Realty. And of course, lots going on with the big team, with the Vancouver Canucks and the trade deadline. Busy, busy time for Abbotsford with a lot on the line right now as well. Last night, Abbey loses 5-3 to Ontario, still in sixth place in the Pacific Division, and a lot to play for here. They're just a couple points behind the Wranglers, the Calgary Wranglers, the Flames farm team. And, you know, even going from fifth to sixth can really matter a lot, determining how many home games you're going to get in the AHL playoff format. So still a ton to play for down the stretch in terms of playoff seeding for the Abbey Canucks. By the way, they did lose last night, but Arshdeep Bains gets a goal. So good to see that he comes up, gets the stint in the NHL, goes back down to Abbotsford, keeps producing, keeps doing his thing at the AHL level. Two more road games for Abbey against Ontario Friday and Saturday. Then next week, they're back with four home games. Those are going to be big. Four games in a row at home in Abbotsford for the Abbey Canucks. You can go get those get tickets for those games now at abbotsford.canucks.com. As you know, the end of the season starts to come into view for Abbey, just as it does for the Vancouver Canucks. The Abbey Farm Report brought to you by David L. Young of Dexter Realty. Here, there, everywhere. Visit homes by davidlyoung.com. All right, as mentioned, it is the Canucks game day. Here is Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet.
Coach, a lot of the talk over the last few days is how you guys were able to play disciplined and patient. Is that sort of the message coming into tonight when you know it's another tough test?
Yeah, I think, you know, this time of year, I mean, you want to play this right way, you know, 82 games a year, but I think as the season goes on, you know, the temperature goes up, there's a lot, the games get more stressful, a lot more pressure. It's really important that you go to the spots that we want players to go to. You know, you want them to be creative, but there's certain times where the system has to be in place. And I think last game, for the most part, guys were in the right spots.
What do you like about what you were able to do there this morning and get ready for tonight?
Well, we had a day off yesterday, so, you know, there's a little bit of energy out there, which is nice. Thought both power play units look good. I hope it can transpire into something tonight. You know, a couple little things that Vegas do. They're a very structured team, very well coached. So it's important that, you know, we stay in our structure.
What do you do in terms of a message with one game and then going home, just to make sure that everyone is mentally dialed in and ready?
Yeah, I think if you look at our home record and our attitude throughout the year, it's been pretty good. It's not like a big warning. I think the guys have done a nice job all year with our road record, the way we approach things. I think the leadership groups are good. You know, I think they understand how important this is. A business trip, right? This is a big game for us tonight, playing a desperate team that doesn't like where they're at, but made some big moves, and they're Stanley Cup champions. So it's going to be a great test for us.
You still like Lindholm at third line center right now? Talk, you like the way that's working?
Yeah, I do. I just think our strength's up the middle. And personally, I think, it gives us good matchups. But, you know, that doesn't mean it's set in stone. But for me, I think when we start getting Dakota back and we start getting some people back here, I think it'll be a lot better balance. And I like that.
You said this can be a tough time for players, the trade deadline. How about Lindholm's now got to hear his name again after being traded?
Yeah, I talked to him, and, you know, he's a veteran. He understands, you know, it just takes one person to throw, a rumor out there, and then it gets heat, right? So I think nowadays guys understand that, you know, there's going to be a lot of talk, and you got to deal with it. But it's important that you, as a head coach, too, that you talk to your players about that and try to help them out with the rumors.
Stylistically, do you think his game, one of the things I asked him about was how he, you know, likes to stay above the puck, and I guess whereas
a winger,
whereas, you know, when he was playing winger often plays a more direct north-south style. How much better suited do you like his game at center rather than wing?
Yeah, I think he's a really, really good centerman, a 200-foot guy, and I thought he was one of our better players last game. So, he hasn't been here a long time. Learning the system, I've thrown him in different combinations, so he's just got to get settled in. I've liked his game. He's fine. You know, the one good thing, if you're not scoring, you're playing good defensive hockey. You know, that's what I like about Lindy. It's not always about goal scoring. It's about playing the game the right way, and he plays the game the right way.
That is Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet. We can dive into that in a second, because I thought there was some interesting stuff about Elias Lindholm in there. Now, having said that, I just finished the Abbey report, and as I finish and throw to Rick Tocchet, our pal Rick Dhaliwal, our frenemy, I guess, really, Rick Dhaliwal, from Donnie and Dolly, tweets out that agent Joakim person, I guess, tells me defenseman Elias Pettersson will wrap up his league play in Sweden this weekend and then travel to Abbotsford next week to join the Abbey Canucks. So maybe a little early to get him in the lineup for one of those four home games next week that I mentioned for Abbey, but one of the Canucks' top blue line prospects will in fact be joining the Abbotsford Canucks for the end of this season, and that's expected, but good to see confirmation from the agent. Good to see a timeline on it as well for, and you know, one of the bits of reporting that you've had this week, Trance, that surprised me and I thought was really good information is that the team is extraordinarily high on Elias Pettersson.
Yeah. Yeah. And both Pettersson and Lekkerimäki are expected to be down in Abbotsford on the conclusion of their SHL seasons. Obviously Pettersson's season already nearing its end. Lekkerimäki's Örebro is going to the playoffs. Going to be interesting to track his progress over the course of this run, especially with how hot he has run over the past few weeks. Really, really interested to see how he performs in the postseason. But once that's done, the Canucks will be very, very eager to bring him into the organization formally, beginning down in the American League. Both players, by the way, being on the reserve list as the deadline passes, will be eligible to compete for the Canucks in the playoffs should they be needed. I would expect that neither will, in fact, debut in that sort of high-stakes environment, but an option that will exist for the team. Yeah, going to be fun. Like,
it's exciting. It's a good, exciting for Abbotsford, exciting for Canucks fans to have a prospect that's so well-regarded coming over and playing in their backyard.
Good for my mileage, too, because I'm definitely going
making the drive out?
Well, I have to.
I'm
definitely driving out to see Lekkerimäki make his North American pro debut, and I'll probably do the same for Elias Pettersson, given that, you know, the Canucks are approaching a pretty high-stakes deadline and are balking significantly at including him in deals.
All right, so that's the latest from Rick Dhaliwal and Elias Pettersson that he'll be joining the Abbotsford Canucks next week after his season in Sweden wraps up over the weekend. So we just heard from Rick Tocchet, and of course they're playing the Vegas Golden Knights tonight in Vegas, looking for their third straight win, three wins on this road trip it would be as well. And, you know, a lot of talk about Elias Lindholm, and interesting situation now with Lindholm, because of course, I think it was just on Wednesday where there was that really interesting, fascinating, or maybe Tuesday, I don't know, but fascinating report from Chris Johnston that the Canucks were maybe interested in flipping Elias Lindholm, talking to Boston. Could they do that as part of an effort to go get Jake Guentzel? The reporting now seems to be that's probably not in the cards. Like, that's a fairly remote possibility, but you've still created a situation now where you paid a big price to get a guy in, it hasn't been working out necessarily, and now he's heard his name in trade rumors again, and it's going to be interesting to see how both the player and the team kind of handle that dynamic and try to patch things up a little bit past the trade deadline here.
To that end, Harmon Dial, my colleague at The Athletic, spoke with Lindholm following Canucks morning skate today in Vegas. "I was away from my family for almost a month," Lindholm told Dial, "so that was kind of tough, but now we're settled, moved into a place, and my family's in town as well. It'll be nice to get back to Vancouver and settle in a little more, see my family." Just reading that to reiterate that while it's been interesting for us, you can imagine how stressful it would be to have gone through all that Lindholm has gone through over the course of the past month. Lindholm talked also about the system differences in Vancouver compared to Calgary in discussing his slow offensive start. "Here, I think we're more free, work hard, finish hits, and make plays," Lindholm said. "In Calgary, it was really follow the system. I think it's more free here, but it's definitely some changes that took a little bit of getting used to. But now I've played 15 games, so I feel pretty comfortable." Asked about the deadline and the peace of mind that he'll feel once it passes, he said, "Yeah, it's a couple more hours and it's over. I'm here and we'll see." My understanding here remains that trading Lindholm isn't in the Canucks' plans, but they're not going to hang up the phone if a team calls and makes a silly offer or an aggressive offer or an interesting offer. You know, fundamentally, what this team is looking for is what they were looking for when they traded for Lindholm. They're looking for someone to bring a dynamic, consistent scoring threat to their top six. I don't know why I stumbled over those words so hard. And, you know, to this point, Lindholm hasn't brought that. But I do think the club has liked the Miller, Pedersen, Lindholm down the middle thing in terms of, you know, making them even stodgier to play against defensively. I also think, you know, one under-discussed aspect of this is Lindholm going into the third line center hole freed Pew Suter to go up the lineup. And, you know, if you were to deal Lindholm, you'd have to move Suter back there. You'd have to be, or Bluger. You'd have to be rolling Miller, Pedersen, Bluger, Suter down the middle. Suter needs to be in this team's top six. Like, I've seen enough. I know he hasn't scored in 16 games, and that's an easy thing for people to bring up, but the way that every line he gets put on controls play territorially is really impressive.
And I think the other thing with Lindholm, because I know there's the fear, and we've seen it, okay, like, what's this going to do? Is his confidence already low, and now is it going to be lower? How is this going to affect his play, right? The distraction and maybe the frustration of hearing your name in trade rumors so quickly, you know, as you talked about with the young family there. The one thing is, Lindholm has every incentive to turn things around and have a successful run with the Vancouver Canucks. It doesn't matter if he wants to sign here. It sounds like that's probably not going to be in the cards from either party's perspective, but this is a guy who's a pending UFA who has, based on reporting, passed up opportunities to sign some pretty hefty deals to stay in Calgary, and his stock is falling right now, right? He has every incentive to have a really, really good run, help this team in the playoffs, be at his best on the ice to set himself up for a payday come the summer. So I'm sure that it wasn't fun. I'm sure that he's probably doesn't think it was like a great look by the organization, but I don't think that's going to trickle down necessarily to what he does on the ice, because it's not as if he can just say, well, whatever, it doesn't matter what happens, I'm still going to get my money. Like, he has a lot of money on the line based on what he does for the remainder of this season and into the playoffs, Elias Lindholm.
Well, this is one of the things to note, too, because you're right. Lindholm's form has, in part, caused his value to fall a bit.
And I don't just mean since he's joined the Canucks.
All season.
Yeah. It's a trend.
But you get dealt to Vancouver, and instead of popping off, right, your results and the team's results list.
It's also different, I think, because there's always the situation when
down the lineup.
When a player's on a bad team, it's like, well, the team is bad. You know, how 100%. Motivated was he? But then you go to a good team and you're more in the spotlight. It doesn't turn around. Yep. There's public frustration with it. Like, it's worse for your stock than if you're just doing it on a struggling team.
And he's been playing on the line with, you know, American League players that the club is auditioning, and Connor Garland, who he hasn't found chemistry with yet. And promise you, a contract year guy isn't looking at that and thinking they're necessarily in the most favorable position to succeed personally.
Mm-hmm.
And so that there's a lot to balance for Rick Tocchet here, but that's also what the club brought Rick Tocchet in to do, handle these tough conversations. The fact that he's talked to Lindholm should be zero surprise, given that, you know, one of Tocchet's specialties in the team's own eyes is his ability to frankly and effectively handle delicate situations. And that's what this is. Without question, at this point, this is a delicate situation on all sides.
And as much as he was brought in with the hopes that, you know, maybe he could play with Elias Pettersson and help his scoring, maybe he'd allow you to reunite the lotto line and hold down second line, I think it's perfectly defensible with the personnel they have right now to choose to go Miller, Pedersen, Lindholm down the middle, right? And I think it would be perfectly defensible if, in Rick Tocchet's eyes, he's just too valuable as a center for his two-way presence, that you keep him there and let him be that role. I think you maybe just have to adjust your expectations. And all right, plan A for Lindholm's usage didn't work out. Maybe now you have to turn to plan B. But I don't think there's an inherent, as much as it's like, wow, you traded a first-round pick for a guy, and now he's your third-line center, you can still get a lot of value off of a third-line center, depending on how you're using them, depending on how they're contributing on special teams and all of those things. So that doesn't concern me. I think it's totally fine to use him like that if that's what Tocchet thinks is best, and you can still get a ton of value out of the player doing that.
Provided that you're getting enough goals.
You would like to see that.
And provided that, I don't know, man. They gave up a lot for a third-line center. If he's just going to be a third-line center who's not playing PP1 and hasn't punched up their PK, they paid too much for this player. Like, I don't know that. I'm not even. I liked the trade from a fit perspective. I think it was the right sort of move to make. But that's just basic fact of the matter is that if this guy is brought in at the cost of a first, an additional draft pick, Hunter Brustevich and Andre Kuzmenko, plus another prospect, and he's just your third line center, that's too much to pay.
But you can't let what you paid for him influence how you're going to use it.
No. That's,
that's what I meant.
That I
right?
agree with.
Like, okay, hey, maybe you thought it was going to be one thing. It didn't work out. How can you still make him help you? Help get him to help you win, right? And maybe that's third line center. Yeah, that's not what you want to pay for a third line center, but that's done. You've already paid it. You're not getting that back if you play him in the top six.
And we'll see what he looks like, you know, when Dakota Joshua comes back. I mean, that's been a big missing link on that line.
Yep.
You know, there's a lot of road to run here. It's only been 15 games. I still think that Elias Lindholm's a good player. But I don't think it's worked out. And I do think it's a delicate situation. And when I say I don't think it's worked out, I don't think it's worked out from anyone's perspective, right? Like, there's no way the player is happy with how things have transpired,
no.
especially over the last 4 days. But even before that, with sort of the super unpredictable usage mm-hmm. that, you know, he sort of went through before being assigned to a third line role, acting as a pivot between a rotating cast of auditioning American League winner, wingers and, you know, a puck dominant undersized winger who, you know, we've seen other players struggle to mesh with.
Yep.
Right. I'm not going to do the, I think Garland's hard to play with thing. I think Garland can carry a line. I think he's top of the lineup guy, but, who's actually sort of underutilized. That would be my take on Garland, but I can understand from the perspective of a guy who's coming into a new environment and things aren't working out, it being frustrating to, especially if you don't like have it immediately in terms of how to play off of.
Yeah. Look, there's no doubt that it hasn't been a good fit so far. It hasn't worked out so far, but
plenty of time to turn
there's
around.
There's lots of time. Yeah. There's lots of time between now and, you know, whenever the Canucks when their season eventually ends, however it may end.
The final assessment of this deal will not be written in March unless the Canucks trade.
Unless
the
they trade, then it sure will. Although even then, I guess it'll depend what they get back and how that performs.
Well,
so,
except that Lindholm's tenure in Vancouver will be like an interesting,
hilarious footnote.
Well, the first time we've ever seen a team pay a premium to acquire a massive
and
trade
then
deadline rental, trade him before the deadline.
Quickly, Hanifin, Hronek.
Right. Oh, right. I teased that and then didn't get into it. Imagining that Hanifin signs for 7x8, mm-hmm. as Kevin Weeks suggested in a report today that he would, and factoring in Gustav Forsling.
Yes.
Former Canuck, in fact, two former Canucks earning one-way contracts. Both of them.
Oh, yeah. Jonah Gadjevich
both
as well.
Of them cleared,
yes.
Or both of them claimed off waivers at various points of their careers. So congratulations to both of them. But Gustav Forsling, I've been talking about him all year. In the most glowing terms, $5.75 million over 8 years for Forsling, a new contender for the single best contract in hockey, given how highly I rate that player, non-ELC division, of course. How do those affect the Hronek deal? Because neither of those comparables are like pushing the envelope from the player's side. At the end of the day, and this is something that I sort of thought in the wake of the people's reaction to Noah Hanifin's trade, where people are like, man, they only paid that. And it's like, yeah, but it's Noah Hanifin. You know, like, no offense to a really good player. I don't think Noah Hanifin's like a star defender. He's a good piece. At the end of the day, you're talking about, in Hanifin, a guy who's eclipsed 40 points once in his career, right? You're talking about a guy who's got 35 points this season and has been like a top four guy. In Filip Hronek, you're talking about a 45-point defenseman who's going to hit 60 with ease and is leading this team in 5-on-5 minutes, right? Massive difference. They're functional comparables for the sake of conversation, but they're not hard comparables in that the Canucks can't submit the Noah Hanifin deal as a comparable in an arbitration hearing. One, it's an 8-year deal, and an arbitrator can only award a 1-year deal anyway. But also, he's a UFA. Like, he's a pending UFA. He's literally not comparable, as the NHL defines it in Hronek's context, within the auspices of a arbitration hearing. I don't know why auspices was the simple word that came to mind as,
sure.
as I groped for something hard to... well, God, I'm really talking about... This is Homer Simpson, the device that's used to spoon...
Sorry, what were you groping for?
A hard word to end my... Yeah, no, that wasn't good.
I thought it was great. I don't know what you're talking about. I enjoyed it.
Sorry, so auspices. I should have just...
It
like,
all started with auspices.
I just
went downhill from there.
And moved on.
Yep. Lesson learned. All right.
Sorry.
You're like a minute away from being done. Wrap, finish it, finish the point, and we'll get out of here.
The point being, Hronik's a better player with a higher statistical threshold and a unique set of circumstances given his arbitration hearing. So while the Hanifin deal going through at least helps the Canucks avoid, like Matrix style, like Neo ducking bullets, at least helps them avoid, you know, an unfortunate comparable, something that makes you queasy. That's sort of about the only impact.
Yeah, I guess that's the way to look at it. It's not going to drive the price up.
It's not harmful.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's as helpful as you'd hope it would be, especially because one thing, you know, despite what Alan Walsh likes to talk about on Twitter, and quite rightly, the low tax, Vegas is a low tax state. And BC is not. So that's another factor to weight here as well. Anyway, at the very least, the deal wasn't as bad as my hit for a moment after the word auspices.
All right. We'll end it there, mercifully, for Drance. trade deadline tomorrow.
I'm
going to
be on
coverage.
My game tomorrow, yeah, though, right. Baby.
Wall-to-wall coverage on 650. Canucks talk from 10 to 1. Don't miss it. It's going to be a fun one. Keep it right here on Sportsnet 650.